Welcome to the Beyond Atheism podcast with me, Nathan Alexander, and my co-host, Todd Tavares. Moving beyond questions of God's existence, this podcast asks what atheists should be doing next in a godless world.
So today, it's a bit different. It's just Nathan and I, and we're going to think about what's in a name, debating non-religious labels, what they mean socially, and where we find our identities on this. And this, I think a good place to start with this is with you, Nathan. You wrote a short piece on the history of agnosticism in The Humanist a few years ago. Basically, you trace the sociocultural and classist roots of the term and how that term was used to distinguish different types of people, basically. It's a short article. It's informative. It's fun. I think the best thing about it is it elicited a lot of really good comments, ranging from Dr. Alexander is apparently a militant atheist, perfect, to brilliant, to, well, you received some unfavorable comparisons to a PC thug, but were also praised for drafting a fascinating social and semantic history. So let's start at the piece and then build out into how this affects, let's make it relevant and make it relevant with all the other terms or identities, I guess, worldviews connected to the sort of atheist position. Because we've recognized for a while, like, it's not just atheists and agnostics. It's a huge tent. So take us back. When did the term agnostic come into use and what did it mean then?
So, yeah, the term is coined in the 1860s by Thomas Henry Huxley, who was a scientist and was known as Darwin's pit bull for his support of evolution. So anyway, Huxley coins this term because he wants a label to use instead of atheist to sort of describe his own religious views. What the term for him means is that certain things are unknowable. Mm. So in particular, the question of like whether gods exist or God exists is fundamentally unknowable. So the interesting thing that I mentioned in the article, though, is that atheists at the time in the 19th century were very critical of Huxley and anyone who was sort of claiming themselves to be an agnostic, because basically they were saying that these agnostics were these sort of middle-class people who wanted to move in respectable society, but they didn't want to be tainted with the label of atheist. So they adopted this new term.
Yeah, and this is in the UK.
Yes, yeah, right.
This is high society in London.
Yeah, yeah, right, yeah, which is like still very much like very class-based, I suppose. So it's like, you know, which class you're a part of is really important. Basically, like, and many atheists came from the working classes, and were sort of, atheism was associated with being working class and also being sort of politically radical, and whereas like the agnostics were less politically radical as well. I think it's almost like they want to in some ways like have their cake of being not believing in God. But they don't want to have themselves be called atheists. They still want to move sort of in respectable society.
So that's what it is. But Huxley lays out a very specific philosophical definition, right? That it's agnostic. You can't know. It's about the inability to know God. In the 1860s, the mid 19th century, England, were there broad differences in what atheists and agnostics actually believed?
Yeah, I think this is where like the atheists get angry with the agnostics, because they're actually like, I think the agnostics criticize the atheists for being like overly certain or like 100% sure there's no God. But I don't think that was really ever the case for atheists. I mean, I think in the article I mentioned Charles Bradlaugh, who's another 19th century guy who's a famous atheist, and his point was always that like it was more that he needs to see the evidence and the evidence hasn't been given or whatever, and so like until he sees evidence he's gonna be an atheist. So it's, and he says, like, it's not on me to make a sort of positive case that God doesn't exist. Like, it's more of a sort of negative case for, like, it's not providing positive evidence that God doesn't exist, but kind of debunking any sort of evidence for God's existence.
Right. It sounds like that was the same as the agnostic.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, I think, like, there wasn't, I guess the key point of the article is there wasn't much sort of substantive difference between the two. It was more about the politics and, like, the class sort of connotations of the two terms. And I think that's where it gets relevant to today, because there's a whole bunch of different sort of non-religious labels, and there's a lot of overlap between them. I think part of it is, like, there is some differences in content and substance, but it's also, there's also a lot of just about the connotations and what they sort of signal about someone.
So what were those connotations if we go back to 1865? Because this is kind of key for how other people see us, right? This is the part that we don't have control over. That there is, like, we can dig into the philosophical distinctions, or what the philosophy argues or means. But it's weird that, like, once you move past that, once you move into how people interact in the world, atheist or agnostic, in the 1860s, 1870s, 1880s, there's no difference except how they're perceived. So how were they perceived at that time? Starting with the atheist, what were they, if you had to, like, make a list of how people view or what people think when you say, I'm an atheist, it's 1880.
Yeah.
What does it mean to them?
Well, I think it means, I think the big thing is, like, they lack morals. Well, obviously this isn't my view, but I mean, there's no sort of God, there's no afterlife to keep them moral. So basically they're immoral in some way. And I think this was, you know, this has a really long history of seeing atheists as sort of fundamentally immoral. So I think that was the big thing, and just sort of just not respectable, like, not people you want to hang out with. I mean, if you're a member of, like, respectable society, you don't want to associate with atheists.
So they're undesirable.
Yeah, exactly.
It's low, it's dirty, they're untrustworthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I think it's, like, it's related to, it's to this class thing as well, that godlessness was seen to be sort of a thing among the working classes. And so that's, like, it's all sort of tied up with that. And also another thing is it's probably tied up with gender too, maybe, like Bradlaugh, who I mentioned earlier, he was, and his sort of comrade, I guess, Annie Besant, were tried for publishing, like, a birth control pamphlet. And I think there was something about, like, just the way the attitudes atheists might have had about gender, probably less rigid about gender roles, maybe, and sexuality and so on. So I think that's probably another aspect.
Whereas the agnostics, they were more, I mean, could you say that they were more conservative?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Not to say that they were, like, you know, arch conservatives or anything, but just like Darwin was also, Charles Darwin was also a agnostic. I think it was just, they were like, they might have supported extending the vote and things like that to a broader part of the population. But they were not, they were much more sort of gradual reformers than radicals.
So atheism's part of the radical sheet.
Just to sort of again bring it back to today, you can still see that. Like, I always look at these polls of political views by religion. And so most polling places, I guess, they differentiate between atheists and agnostics in the polls. And pretty much always you'll see that whatever the question is, atheists are, like, the most radical.
Right.
And then always, like,
always to the left.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, like, agnostics are there too, but just not quite to the extent of the atheists, which is interesting. I mean, somewhat, like, lingering sort of thing maybe from the 19th century.
I mean, that's an interesting point. Do you think that's part of what it is that it's in this sort of terminology and it's the connotations that have carried over since that time?
Yeah, I think there's something about maybe atheism has a more almost like aggressive connotation to it. Whereas agnostic seems a bit more conciliatory to other worldviews, because it's not saying like, this is definitely wrong. It's sort of more saying like, well, we can't know yet. So I think that could be part of it. And maybe it's something to do with temperament, maybe, that the more kind of aggressive or strident or whatever, outspoken or something, radical people might gravitate towards atheists, whereas like the label atheist, whereas the more kind of conciliatory people go to agnostic.
I don't know. Right. Maybe that's what's happening. Was there like a continuation? Because I'm trying to think quickly about this in terms of that sort of atheist mantle, like who's carried it. It is typically more strident, right? It's often associated with like Marx and Nietzsche and Freud, and I guess to Dawkins, who's very, very assertive about it.
Yeah. One thing, I'm not sure if I included it in that particular article, but there's a quote from Bertrand Russell, who was sort of a famous atheist, I guess, yeah.
He wrote Why I'm Not a Christian.
Yes, right.
Fantastic tract, yeah.
But he has got some quote basically saying, you know, if I'm speaking to a general audience, then I'll call myself an atheist. But if I'm speaking to a room full of philosophers, I'll call myself an agnostic. So I think that's sort of an interesting thing too. Like in which sort of context do you use a particular label for yourself?
Yeah, right.
It might change. Yeah.
How specific you want that definition to be.
Yeah. And yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what you want to sort of signal to the audience, whatever audience you're speaking to, I guess.
So who from the 1860s, were there particular individuals who carried this and advanced the agnostic position, or did it just become another sort of tag that people could either pick up and wear on their chest or leave on the side?
There were many people who took it up, but I think it also like with so many of the terms, there was a lot of overlap between atheist and agnostic. So it wasn't quite as stark as like lower working class people use atheist and middle class use agnostic. Like I think it did begin to all sort of mix together and so on. Like in the Bertrand Russell case.
Which one do you think is more accurate, or do you have a preferred term?
I prefer atheist, although I think it's just because there's less ambiguity with like what the meaning is. But I think like technically I would say I'm probably an agnostic because I leave some kind of room that in theory there could be a God, I guess. Yeah. What about you?
It depends on the day of the week, to be honest. Uh-huh. I don't know if you've ever vacillated on it. Because to me, like there's zero evidence, right? And mm-hmm. we can't say with certainty. It's the problem with the black swan, right? All swans are white.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. Right. Like we can't do that. But based on what I've seen, it would take a lot. It's possible, I guess, but I haven't seen any evidence for the existence of God, or for especially from religious authorities, what people tell us is God, or what happened in the past, or what God does in our lives. I see zero evidence for that. And like, it would take substantial evidence over a long time to convince me otherwise. You know, I've got an open mind towards it. There are when there's a published report about studies on the power of prayer on sick people, you know, I always take a look. I want to know what they did. I want to know what they found. And spoiler alert, it doesn't work. It doesn't help.
Yeah. Yeah. I even saw something that if the person who's being prayed for knows they're being prayed for, they actually do worse because
I don't know. They stop crying. Yeah.
Well, I think it's
they relax.
Yeah, I guess there could be a number of explanations. Like it's like they feel very pessimistic. Like I must be in real trouble. Like
if
someone's praying
for
me.
That's all it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I had this idea that we can rate ourselves or rate the term in a highly objective number from one to 10. Like how much. So one being the least and 10 being the most, like how much would you say atheist describes your position?
Oh, that's such a weird skill. 10. Yes. That's okay. Where I'm at. Today, that's where I'm at. Today, okay. It's uh-huh. There's zero evidence. That's it. That's where I stand. So therefore, there's no reason to act as if a God exists. And you, where are you on your 1 to 10 atheist scale?
I would say 10 as well. In that, I guess I'm not sure really what the number actually means, but
actually, okay, here's something I'll cop to. This was kind of antagonistic. I had a statistics class in undergrad, and the poor professor teaching the class, he made such a mistake asking people about the probability that God exists. And he asked the kid next to me, and the kid's like, I know it's 100% God exists. You could tell, like, it ruined the point he was trying to make. So he backed off a little bit and then asked me, what about you? What percent? I'm like, zero. I know. I'm certain. There's no God. ruined the class.
Yes. So the professor's point was going to be something about like the ambiguity of
we can't have certainty. I don't know. You know what the thing is? I never learned what his point was because totally skunked the classroom.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the problem with asking for audience participation, I guess.
I know. Never do audience participation. So, the thing is philosophically, it's very easy to identify with the agnostic position as well. Put some meat on the bones here. When you think about what it means to be an agnostic, if we're looking at the, you know, Pew Research or something like that, or the census on atheists and agnostics, what is the working definition that they have there? Or is there one? Is this just self-identification?
Yeah, I think so. I think whenever it's a poll, like they just, it's self-identification. So that also means that people might have different definitions, like for what they mean by agnostic. But I mean, it is usually, there's not 100% certainty that gods don't exist.
Well, not according to my statistics class.
Yeah. Yeah. But you wouldn't, So... from 1 to 10, then how much would you say you're an agnostic, or how much would you identify with that label?
I kind of want to steal Birdie's position here. You know, it depends on the audience, but I mean, and then it's a 9 basically, like it's because it's if you read through like the early parts of the Bible, the, you know, before people very early on, there's no way to know this stuff, right? Like you can't test it. You can't measure it. It's unknowable. So in that sense, yeah, I agree that like if, you know, the nature of God would be unknowable, but we can look around and say, but there's no God. Like that's pretty obvious. There are the amount of things that I know nothing about is substantial, probably infinite at this point.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Could God be one of those things? It's possible. Could it be Bertrand Russell's teapot that's in orbit around Jupiter? Could be, but you know, probably not. It's not there. What about you? Is that where you stand on that one?
Yeah, I would say I would identify as a 7 maybe with agnostic. I guess we should also say, like a couple weeks ago we had Sarah Levin on from Secular Strategies, and she was saying like she calls herself an agnostic atheist. And I think that's like, I think you can sort of combine them, I guess. I mean, you know, there's always a possibility. It could be the true. And I think it's also that we don't have knowledge of whether God exists. And it's like, it's hard to even know what that might look like. You know, some questions, I guess, it's like we don't know the answer to, but we could figure out how we could answer them. Whereas this one, it's not even clear how you could, like what evidence would even convince someone that there was a God. I mean, if you had a dream where there was like a higher power speaking to you saying like, I'm God and I exist, like that wouldn't be very good evidence. I mean,
you would
doubt your sanity. I mean, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's basically like, we know that God is real because some guy heard it from this other guy who's dead now.
Yeah. Right.
Like that's it. So the thing I would add to that is that, yeah, right, that agnostic, I think it sounds like where you and I differ on this is that you've got this, it's this all encapsulated thing, right? Like there is a possibility of God or gods. It's just, it's unknown and we may not ever be able to know them. Whereas my perspective on this is everything they tell us about God is wrong because there's no evidence that, right? Like we can't know this stuff. The stuff that you say about this God is unknowable. And therefore, I don't trust you on it. I think I have less reflection on the bigger part of the world. But this, even in this, so these are the two big streams that they talk about a lot. And I guess there is this sense of these connotations still exist, right? Atheists a bit more strident, a bit stronger, agnostics a bit less confrontational, a bit more easygoing, I suppose. Or maybe even indifferent. It kind of has this sense of,
yeah, that's true too. Yeah. Yeah.
But those aren't the only things that are out there, right? What are some of the other ones that you know of that you can describe for the audience?
Another big one is humanist, which is a bit of a newer term. I guess that comes out in the 1920s and 1930s, more from like almost like Unitarians, and these sort of people who are religious, but they're not very connected to like theism, I guess. And as time goes on, humanism, just any connection to like theism is dropped away. So I think humanism is, it's atheistic, but there's more sort of positive content behind it. Well, this is my impression anyway, like the idea of like science and reason being sort of guiding our knowledge, and things like having rights and freedoms and so on are important, and things like this.
And it also puts humans at the center of beliefs and practices, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, obviously it's in the name, I guess. Yeah, but I think probably humanists would also maybe extend their worldview to other sentient beings, I suppose.
But I think, you know, it's in the name. I think this one, like, it focuses on human interest, right? It's this collective humanity in the collective. Right. So it's a universal idea of humanity, and that is the primary thing in the world. It's not, we're not serving God, we're serving each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And sort of like what matters is this particular life that we have right now, and not like a hypothetical afterlife.
Right. Definitely. Certainly, yeah. Grounded in the here and now. And is this where you is something you identify with strongly?
I would say, let me say I'm an 8. Versus, I don't know, maybe we should record these numbers to see if there's any sort of coherence in them, but maybe an 8. I think I like humanist because it's also like there is more of a positive content. It's not purely just what you kind of don't believe in. It's also, there's also kind of a political or positive content as well.
Right. Yeah, it's part of a larger worldview. And
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Sort of, it gives you an ideological underpinning. I don't know. I think I'd be near like a 6 or a 7.
Okay.
Near there. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, part of it though is my own ignorance. So
yeah. Yeah. I just know that in the Humanists UK, they have something on the website, like a quiz you can do to find out if you're a humanist. And I remember doing it, and I got 100% humanist. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Surprise, surprise.
So. Uh-huh. So I guess that means, yeah.
That means you're a humanist.
I guess so, yeah.
The link will be in the description.
Yeah, we can include that. If it's still there. I think it was a couple of years ago I did it. I guess the only thing is, the only reason maybe for preferring atheist over humanist as a term is like, atheist is so much more straightforward, whereas humanist potentially has a whole bunch of other commitments that you need to adopt. And I probably, like I did on that poll, probably I agree with all of them, but I don't know. I'm somewhat always like reluctant to sign on to any particular particular worldview.
Yeah, well, this is something that we should discuss later as well. Is like what those implications are, and humanists, like it's not institutionalized. It's organized. Humanists are organized.
Yeah, right? That's true. Yeah.
They have an agenda. I want to say they have a plot to take over the world. That's probably not true. Probably not. I remain agnostic on whether or not they're doing
it. I mean, if they did, it would probably be, wouldn't be the worst thing ever.
No, exactly. So. I wouldn't feel that bad about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's keep going. What are some other things we could refer to ourselves as?
Yeah. Another one is free thinker. And that's more of a, you don't really hear that much these days. It's more of a, well, I guess the term, it came out in the 1600s. And then it sort of gets used more and more. And I think it's sort of common in the 1800s. But I think freethinker has, it's more of a broad term than atheism or agnostic. It's sort of any kind of religiously unorthodox people who are doubting religion or, you know, skeptical about the Bible or whatever. Yeah, so it may even include people who believe in some kind of God.
Seems to have been some of the same things to avoid the smear of being an atheist.
That's probably, yeah, I think that's right. that's partly true, I think. I think all the terms to some extent are about finding other labels other than atheism. I
mean, yeah, right, yeah. Yeah, yeah, right. That's I'm making some mental notes here about that.
Yeah.
Let's see where that leads
us. Yeah, but I think the thing, like, free thinker was also sort of stigmatized as well. So I think it's like, you know, you can only run away from this stuff like so much, you know. Yeah. So is free thinker a term you would identify with on a scale of 1 to 10?
But it's so, this is one that, like you're saying, like, it's so watery, right? It can mean basically anything. It sounds like hippies. So I don't really identify.
Okay, but
with the hippie one,
you have to put a number on it though.
So easy. I don't know. Let's go with the 5.
Okay.
Because half the times it means you think whatever you want. The other time, I don't know what it means. It means you lost your keys to your van, so you can't go to Burning Man or something. What about you? Where are you on Freethinker?
I would say maybe an 8.
An 8? That's pretty
common. I don't know. I'm not sure. It was a more common term in the 1800s, and that's my area, I guess, or my research area. So I feel some kind of like connection to it, I guess.
Definitely. Got an affinity for it.
Yes.
But I think, like, whereas agnostic is a very like textbook sort of word, freethinker is a very de jure type of word. It just means whatever. It can describe almost anybody.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think it's like, well, initially, when I was doing my PhD and like working on the topic that would become my book, like I used freethinker in the title, and later on I changed it to atheism because I had to always explain what freethinker meant. So,
right.
So I think that's another thing, like, that you need to sort of think about, I guess, whenever you're claiming a label, like, do people actually have some idea of what this means?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
So things like secularist, this is another one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where did this one come from?
This also came out in the 1800s. So almost around the same time as agnosticism. And it's coined by George Jacob Holyoake. And again, he sort of wanted a more positive version of atheism rather than just, again, like what you didn't believe. So secularism to him was a more positive creed. In some ways, even like maybe what humanist is. But again, in a similar way that atheists criticized agnostics, some atheists also criticized people who use the term secularism for the same reason that they were kind of running away from the term. But I think now secularist has a more sort of narrow meaning in terms of, like, someone who's a secularist, they're really concerned about separation of church and state or religion and state.
I mean, that's what I think of when I hear secularist, right? It's someone who just doesn't want to be bothered at all by religion, right? If everything's a secular matter, that's where we resolve it. Is this something you identify with? On a 1 to 10 scale?
Yeah, I would say 7.
Yeah,
I don't know what these numbers mean, but yeah.
I mean, like, so, well, that's weird because I heard you're a militant atheist.
Yes, right.
So, yeah. Like, I think there feels like there's a difference between secularism and sort of militant atheism, right? Where secularism is, religion has its place. It's okay to do it, but it's not part of our public world, right?
Yeah.
It's not allowed to, religious decisions don't impact political decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there's a point that you can say that Christians could definitely be secularists, or any religion could be a secularist.
All right. I'm going to go 10 out of 10 on secularism.
Oh, wow. All right.
I'm fine with that. Yeah. Yeah. Of course. It's like a world. That's what we ought to be. There's a wall. Yeah, I mean,
that's true, I guess. But I mean, yeah, that's true.
Let's get to the lightning round, because okay, we need time to reflect on some of these.
And yeah, okay.
Especially because you have a point in the article that we should get to. So let's go through some of these, which are much less common. Rationalist. What does that mean?
Yeah, I guess it's just someone who wants to live by reason. And I think it's basically the same as an atheist and so on. Yeah. What do you think about that term?
Rational thinking is overrated. This argument for revealed preferences, right? Because basically rationalism means like, how do you achieve your goals, right? You choose rational means to do it, and you basically, you're just like painting the target around where the arrow hit, right? Like, yeah, oh, that's what they wanted, and you know you think rationally about how to get there, and that's not really the way humans work. And it often, rationalism is often part of, I think these notions of rationality are these normative impositions on how we ought to behave. So if you read, if you go through economics 101 and 102, basically everything's going to be contradicted later. It's just teaching you how you ought to think, and you ought to think in this rational way. And if you do it, if you train yourself to think in this way, you become hyper-rational. Everything becomes very efficient and very clear. And it never, ever, ever, ever works out like that. Right? I think rationalism is this weird constraint that we put on ourselves. Not part of our actual behavior. And it's not, yeah. And you can justify anything using rationality. So I don't really relate. I'd give it a 3, maybe a 4. Well, rationally, I have to think about it more. But
yes, yeah. I would say maybe the same, maybe 4 or 5, yeah, something like that. Yeah.
But skeptic is a real one. That still comes up. What does it mean if someone's skeptical?
Well, I guess it's just sort of questioning everything. Yeah,
what was the magazine? Was it The Skeptic or was it The Skeptical Inquirer?
Skeptical Inquirer, I think. Yeah, or Skeptic Mag. There's a Skeptic magazine too. I'm not sure.
Jesus Christ, what's wrong with our brains, Nathan?
Well, I think these both might exist.
They might. Okay, they might both be real.
So
one of the great things I'll say about it is this: The Skeptic or The Skeptical Inquirer, can't remember which, took a very long time to come out and support climate change. And because they remained skeptical about the arguments for years. And that, I think, is something that they treated it as a strength. And I think in a lot of ways it was. Like, it was really good having a voice that says, maybe we don't know everything about the environment yet. And really did put in effort to think it through, measure the evidence, take time to critically analyze everything they could, and do it in a very honest way. I think that's important. Like, compared to the skepticism we see around like COVID.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
Cuckoo bananas.
Yeah, and I think that's the weakness of skepticism, is that there's no like positive content. It's just sort of being skeptical of everything. And I think that's valuable to be skeptical, but like, there also needs to be other things as well. So I would be reluctant to have that as my kind of primary identity.
Mm, Definitely. But it's also part of what comes from being an atheist is that you're skeptical of these claims and you require some proof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What number for skeptic for you?
I don't know. I want to say 5.
Okay. I'll say 4.
4.
Yes.
Are you sure? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
What you're thinking of by that.
Yeah.
But how about none or non-religious? Is that where you're at?
I mean, it's something sometimes, like on forums where they say, what is your religion? I'll sometimes check none or non-religious because like atheism isn't a religion per se. So yeah. So I would say maybe like 9. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, 10.
10, okay.
No, that's not true because I'm a recovering Catholic. You know, you're never not a Catholic.
Okay.
I'm in the books forever. I can't get out of them until I get, officially excommunicated. I'm technically, I'm kind of a Catholic. I asked the bishop about this one time and he said, you're out of the church if you've left it in your heart. And I asked, like, can I get that in writing? And like, it was just no go. Don't like, if it's midnight on Christmas, don't harass the bishop. It's not a good look.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I'm torn. Let's go 8.
Okay.
Yeah. Bright? What is a bright?
Yeah, this was a term. It was in the early 2000s that you kind of heard about now and then, sort of to try and put a like positive spin on atheists. Like again, sort of similar to what agnostics did in the 19th century. I think there was some parallels that they wanted to draw with the word gay for so-called homosexual people, and that gay was sort of a more positive word that I think in the maybe 60s and 70s it became more widely used. So like bright was trying to do the same thing in terms of like removing negative connotations. Yeah, but I think you don't really hear that much about it these days. So I would say for me, maybe a 2 for bright. Yeah. What would you say?
A 0. That's the silliest thing.
Okay.
I remember them talking about it, but I was like, that's just, it's a bit extra. Religious naturalist. We talked about that last week.
Yeah. Yeah. So check out that episode if you haven't listened to it
yet. Yeah. How much does that like sort of inform your worldview?
I think I agree almost with the content almost completely, I would say. I guess my only hesitation is it's sort of a confusing term, maybe with religious naturalists, like the religion part, it might confuse some people. So I might say maybe 5. That would be how I identify with it. Maybe. What about you?
I'm much higher on that one.
Okay.
I like the holism to it because it rejects humanism, right?
Yeah, I mean, if humanism is just about like humans are sort of the most important thing.
Another part. They're not the most important part.
Yes.
The entirety of the sort of natural world is what's important. We need to think about it that way. We're defined by our relationships to others. Like, I think that way already. It seems to be part of a like integral theory where it's almost got a, dialectical change. And that the way it was described last week, it's almost very organic, right? It's like, this is something that people believe. It's an approach to life that we have developed through conversation and discussion and just by acting on our principles. So I like it a lot, but like you said, the term doesn't really move me. But as the content, 7 or 8, somewhere in there. Yeah. Oh, and to go back a couple weeks, how about Satanists? How do you identify with Satanists?
Again, I think this is something I probably agree almost 100%, I think, with the Satanists. Well, I'm not sure. I mean, probably there's some differences, but very...
Also, it's not humanist.
Yeah. Well, what do you mean by that?
They don't look at humanity in total. They're not a humanist organization. They're based on the individual.
Okay, right.
And the supremacy of individual rights.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
So I think I would say maybe a 6 for Satanist for me.
Six for six. Wow. Nathan Alexander. It's Satanic Temple. We should clarify.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah,
the Satanism of the Satanic Temple.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and that's another episode that people should listen to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the thing that I love is that they are confrontational, usually in constructive ways.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think that's the really good thing. It's like, it's not confrontation for its own sake.
No. And that they do embody their principles. I think that's fantastic. And the principles are largely, mostly, if you go through it pretty closely, it sounds a lot like what we've been raised to believe, right? It's secular liberal society, if you take it seriously. But I mean, the thing with the Satanists is, and like, we know this is exactly what's happened to the Satanic Temple, is that their identity, how they see themselves, right, is very different than the way it's been constructed socially, right? Where, like, we maybe get to choose parts of our identity, but that's not how the world sees us, right? And like we're talking about, like, if we go back to the original, like, how atheists get this dumped on them, especially in the 1860s. You're not allowed to hold positions of political power. You're not allowed to testify in courts. You're completely untrustworthy, right? This is projected onto people. And we still, I mean, like, even in our, like, what we've been doing is working through not these very detailed philosophical definitions, but going through the general idea and attaching this connotation. Like, these things have a huge impact. And in your article, you suggested that, like, okay, agnosticism is just atheism in a top hat.
That's a quote from someone in the 19th century is saying that.
All right. Yes. I'm trying to give you credit for being a wordsmith.
Yeah, no.
But your point was that people should go back to the root. They should go back to the base and be atheists.
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of like the tongue-in-cheek conclusion that for agnostics not to be scared about the social connotations or whatever of being an atheist. I mean, it is an interesting point, like what you were saying earlier, that there's always this sort of back and forth of, like, whenever you claim a particular identity, it's like you can fashion it yourself, but then there's also the way it's perceived in society. And there's sort of this interplay. I mean, not just with religious or non-religious labels, but really anything. I think you can say I'm such and such a thing, but there's always this back and forth for what society says as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the real tragedy of it, is that, like, when we construct our identities to the extent that we do have that volition, it's totally disrupted by how society adapts it.
Yeah, right? That's true. But then I guess what, this is very, like, philosophical, but, like, I guess sort of what gives the identity meaning is how you fit into the society. Like, I guess if you're just on a desert island, having a sort of identity label wouldn't matter.
Well, that's the thing, but no man is an island, Nathan.
Yes, right, exactly.
That's the problem, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And I mean, we get this, I mean, certainly in daily life, we've, you know, had this either thrust upon us or recognize, like, that we do it. I don't know, like, if you learn someone votes Republican, it kind of changes the way you see them.
That's true. Right? Yes, yes. Yeah.
Like, yeah, we have these things all the time where the identity is like it's like a sorting hat, right? Like, put the sorting hat on, that's your thing. That's how everybody's going to treat you now. But here's the thing. Like, there's a big difference in the way these people are treated by society. If you're a bright, or you're a Satanist, or you're spiritual, like, whatever it is, people are gonna put you in that box, right? So do you, like, sally forth with atheism?
I think so.
I guess I just realized it's called Beyond Atheism.
Yeah.
I think we're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's, like, my primary kind of non-religious identity, I suppose. Yeah, I don't know. What about you? What do you think?
I don't know. It's not. I'm not worried about saying this about you. We're not identitarians, right? Strictly speaking, we're not. We don't base politics strictly on identity, but like it is. There are things that you cannot avoid, right? Like this is going to, especially something like being an atheist or being a bright. There are consequences for it socially in terms of your social position, right? You're not going to be the belle of the ball being an atheist.
Yeah.
There are certainly social costs to it.
Yeah. I guess it depends, like, which depends definitely where you are. I mean, yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm incredibly thankful. Like I wasn't kicked out of my family.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. And there are, and I know I've talked about it here before about how there's a difference between the sort of like identity politics very, very often spills over into economic policies, right? They start by talking about identity and what they're really getting at is the political economy. And the difference is that's not true for discrimination. That's a different thing. And there is, I mean, like discrimination is a real thing based on part of your worldview. But how, I think the important thing is like moving past this. This is something where atheists have made strides, right? Like we're not universally hated anymore. And I think Sarah pointed out, Sarah Levin said that atheists are not majority disliked anymore.
Right. Yeah, right.
Majority accepted. We're moving on. Right? Like how do we turn atheism from this social stereotype to a morality or an ethics or normative behavior that we embody, that when you see it, you go, okay, that's a bunch of atheists. Is there a way to do that? Has it informed your position in a way where like you have this behavior based on your agnostic creed?
It's a difficult question. Like, so you're sort of asking like the fact that I am an atheist, does that give me other commitments that I have to, like other sort of political or philosophical commitments that I need to follow through on or something?
Does it come with a morality? Are there like things that become like you have to take a moral position as an atheist? Are there things that you do, behaviors that you've taken on because they're good? Not because they're self-maximizing, but because they're like morally or ethically good. And that's why you do them. That's informed by your atheists.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I guess one could just be the idea that like there is an afterlife probably. So we need to sort of live our best lives like right now kind of make it count today. And I mean, like, and obviously there's sort of like a personal ethics to that, but then there's something like, you know, climate change or whatever, like we've got to solve that because there's not going to be something waiting for us on the other side, sort of. So we've got to sort that out like now, I guess. Do you feel the same way, sort of?
I think the start, like atheism is the starting point for this, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yes,
it's
right.
It's not the end point.
Yeah.
And it's all these other things that fill it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. I think that's the thing. And I guess that's like sort of the point of the podcast, I guess. Like what's beyond atheism. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, the good thing is it only took an hour to get there, Nathan. It mm-hmm. took just about exactly an hour for us to figure out. Oh, yeah. Atheism is the starting point.
Yeah.
And then we've got to fill in with these other things that actually have positive claims.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I mean, all of these, which as we've talked about before, like they all come preloaded with religious authority is illegitimate. That goes out the window. But there's that. Oh, and the live for today, but typically they're materialist in that they're grounded in the real world and that you don't have an afterlife. You're not living for the afterlife. You're trying to make the most of the world that we live in today. So that, I mean, that's where this should be, right? I think that the question that I'm trying to answer for myself is like, how ought people understand atheists? What should that connotation be?
Yeah, that's true. Hopefully the connotation is they're really cool people and they're
great in bed.
Yes. I mean, like moral, I suppose, and care about humanity and the world and so on. Yeah, I don't know if I really care that much what people think, as long as it's not like actively discriminating against atheists. I don't know.
All right. Well, let's press this further. Let's see if you, as an atheist, you have a good moral underpinning. Nathan, I have a few questions here. They're called, can a true atheist?
Yes.
Mostly tongue-in-cheek, but yeah. I think I take it way too serious. Nathan, can a true atheist lie about their beliefs?
Yes, I would say so.
Really?
In cases where it could be like socially awkward or dangerous to tell the truth. I mean, you know what I mean?
How would you lie about that? What would you say?
What's it depends on the situation, I guess. Well, we can plug another episode from, like, when we were talking with Tom Lawson a couple of weeks ago. Like, and he was talking about being a eulogist at funerals and so on. I mean, I guess, you know, if someone says, like, you know, is talking about their loved one who has recently died, and they're said, like, and they say, you know, oh, like, they've gone to a better place now. And I guess you would say, yeah, they have, or something. I don't know. I mean, you would. So in that sense, like, for a sort of social nicety, right. And yeah. in case it's like, you know, you're confronted by a group of Christians in a dark alley or something, maybe you might. Again, you could lie about your beliefs, something. Yeah. What do you think on that question?
I would take a more tactful position and just not avoid. Just avoid it.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's more my style. Yeah. All right, Nathan, for 10 points. Can a true atheist attend religious education institutions or religious educational institutions? However you say that. So meaning like a Catholic school or a university, something like that.
Yes, maybe. I would say so.
Would you?
I mean, would I?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I mean, but I guess you could. I mean, yeah, right. I don't know. Right. What do you think?
The problem for me would be giving them money. That's
true. Yeah, that's a good point.
That would be problematic for me. Mm-hmm. That would be.
Yeah, that's true.
See, when these are less fun when I do them, Nathan.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to change the next one and make it a little more fun. I have here, can a true atheist accept monarchy as a legitimate authority? But I'm going to change it. I'm going to modify it. Can a true atheist use money that has a monarch on it?
Yes, I think they, I mean, we do that in Canada.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, our $20 bill has Queen Elizabeth on it. And I think all our quarters, no. Oh, yeah, like I think all of our coins have the Queen's face on the one side.
Really, so, all of them?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
So yeah. Walk us through, you got what they all have animals, don't they?
The coins?
Yeah. You got the loonies.
Yeah, so there's, yeah, this is a big tangent, but the $1 coin in Canada is called the loony because there's a loon on it, like the bird, like a water bird, called the loon. So it's a loony. And then, so naturally, the $2 coin is
a toonie.
A toonie.
Perfect.
Yes. that's got a polar bear on it.
Really?
Yeah.
I always assumed it had two loons on it. That would make more sense.
Yeah, that would make more sense. Yeah.
Oh, Canada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you get the beaver on the nickel.
Yep. Yeah. And there's a caribou, I think, on the quarter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But then, like, the 10-cent coin has a like a sailboat on it for some reason. It's like
Canada's weird.
Yeah,
that's weird. I like. Yeah. Is it the $5 bill that has the kids playing hockey on it?
It could be. I mean, like the money, it seems to change. Like they change the scenes a lot. Yeah, I think that's one of them has. Yeah, one of them has kids playing hockey on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Can a true atheist prioritize other aspects of their identity?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you, what do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the big point is that this isn't like atheism. We know it. It's a starting point. It's not the whole of what we are. And it's a shame that it gets, you know, as far back as 1860 and certainly before then was like, it gets painted with a very broad brush. And we know there's tremendous nuance inside of it and huge variations in beliefs and how those beliefs shape a worldview that motivates our actions and informs morality and behavior. But the thing is that for all of that, we still, no matter what you choose, we end up in one of these little boxes that's not of our doing. And it's, we don't necessarily know the way, but it's something that we have to be aware of, consider, and find ways to change. Anything else we need to, any other plugs we've got going on?
Just to reiterate, go to our Patreon page if you're interested in supporting the show, and you can access bonus content and so on. Absolutely. If you subscribe.
Awesome. Good thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one other thing I wanted to plug is in a couple of weeks, September 15th, there's going to be sort of a virtual book launch for this Cambridge. It's a 2-volume Cambridge History of Atheism. And there's going to be sort of a virtual event for that. It's September 15th. And it's like, I think it's 1 p.m. Eastern time. But anyway, we'll include the link in the description if you're interested to register. Other than that, is there anything else to plug?
There is so much, and I can't think of anything, Nathan. I live in a cloud. We need to get out there and get organized. That's what we've got to get people on. In terms of like local organization, check a meetup. If you don't find one there, make your own. You can join American Atheists. We have the Secular Coalition in D.C. If you have a group and you're looking to make a bigger impact politically, you can get in touch with Secular Strategies. That's all I can think of. That's all I've got in front of me right now. It's all I can think of. Anything else, Nathan, of importance coming up?
No, just like and subscribe.
And smash that bell. Pull that string.
Yep.
Wave that flag. Wave that freak flag high. Ladies and gentlemen, that's what we're all about now. Complaints and problems, be sure to write Nath G. Alexander at the Twits. The Twiddles, yes. I think that's where they are.
Yeah.
Big thanks to Red Japan.
Mm-hmm. For the music.
For the music.
Yes. Yeah.
Impeccably. No for no. Perfect. Yeah. Every week. God, how do they do it? So good.
Yes.
And that's it, I guess, until next time.
Until next time. Yep.
There you go.